Good morning, everyone. Hey, welcome to the chapel today. For part two, we had started the last time of talking about having people share their how they got met and their kind of courtship years. So we're going to continue that today. We got through three last time. So for those of you who didn't share last time, think about what you're going to share today while you're sitting there. And some of you will get to hear about what things were like in the 80s, I think. Those good old 1980s. Things that we used to do that don't exist anymore. Think about some of those things that, some of the places that you used to go hang out that were really big things and now are gone. So last week, as Cliff pointed out, we talked about Isaac and Rebecca getting married. And today we're going to pick up with that. They're going to have children today. And one of the things that, talk about sibling rivalry. These two brothers fought from day one, even before day one, as we're going to find out today. They fought for a long time. And one of the things that is sad for me about Isaac and Rebecca is it is one of the clearest examples of a pitiful marriage that the Bible talks about. And we're going to talk about the downfall of their marriage and the struggles that they had in their marriage and talk a little bit about how that came to be. So today we're going to talk about the twins and the impact. This passage has some really difficult things in it, some things that are really hard to make sense out of, and things that just grind, well, at least they grind me, and just get to me in a major way. We're going to pick up with, like I said, Genesis 25. We've read Genesis 25, parts of it before, and I'm not going to repeat the part about Ishmael's children and all of his descendants. And we read that Abraham took another wife, Keturah, and the children that he had with her. And then Abraham dies at 175 years old. So put that in the back of your mind. He was 175 years old when he died. So that's going to give you a clue to some of the things that take place in our story today. So where we're going to pick up is in verse 19. This is the account of the family line of Abraham's son Isaac. Abraham became the father of Isaac, and Isaac was 40 years old when he married Rebekah, the daughter of Bethuel and the sister of Laban. Israel prayed to, by the way, a very common theme, right, in these people's lives. Very common. Isaac prayed to the Lord on the behalf of his wife because she was childless. The Lord answered his prayers, and his wife Rebekah became pregnant. The babies jostled each other within her, and she said, "Why is this happening to me?" So she went to inquire of the Lord. The Lord said to her, "Two nations are in your womb, and two people are within you will be separated. One people will be stronger than the other, and the older will serve the younger." When time came for her to give birth, there were twin boys in her womb. The first came out red. His whole body was like a hairy garment. So they named him Esau. After that, his brother came out, and his hand was grasping Esau's heel, so he was named Jacob. Israel was 60 years old when Rebekah gave birth to them. The boys grew up, and Esau became a skillful hunter, a man of the open country, while Jacob was content to stay at home among the tents. Isaac, who had a taste for wild game, loved Esau, but Rebekah loved Jacob. Once when Jacob was cooking with stew, Esau came in from the open country, famished. He said to Jacob, "Quickly, let me have some of that red stew. I am famished." This is why he was called Edom. Jacob replied, "First, sell me your birthright." "Look, I'm about to die," Esau said. "What good is this birthright to me?" But Jacob said, "Swear to me first." So he swore an oath to him, selling his birthright to Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau some bread and some yentl soup. Or stew, I'm not sure what happened to the red. And he ate and drank, and then got up and left. So Esau despised his birthright. So as we go back to the beginning here, and we read that Rebekah did not have children. I I don't know why the Lord made these people wait for so long for everything. This couple waited how many years before they had children? 20 years. 20 years. Because we know that what? He was 60 years old. Isaac was 60 years old when Rebekah gave birth to these twins. He was married at 20. It also tells you that Abraham was how old when the twins were born? 160, right? He got to see his grandchildren for 15 years before he died. He finally got to see God's fulfilled promise for those last 15 years. But he waited a long time. He probably had to think, man, finally had Isaac, and now Isaac and Rebecca aren't having children. I hope he didn't go and ask him, are you pregnant yet? Are you pregnant yet? Right? The question that some people say they get asked all the time. Back then, being pregnant was a sign of God's blessing on you. Being barren was a sign of God's wrath or displeasure with you. And again, Rebecca had to go through that period. Isaac prayed for her. God delivered her from that. How do we today talk about infertility? How do we walk with people who are struggling with infertility, who've not had children? There was a different time and a different place, but we too have people, couples who have infertility, and how do we best minister to them? How do we help them through that time? For those of you who have ever walked with people in fertility or have been infertile yourself, you know how difficult of a road that is and how trying and how difficult that is. But for 20 years, this couple did not have children. Finally, they're expecting twins. I don't know how they knew they were having twins. Did they know they were having twins? There wasn't an ultrasound on every corner, so I don't think they were getting ultrasounds at that time. So I don't know how they discovered they had to. Did they even know they were having twins until Rebecca's like, this is a lot of movement in there. There's something really weird going on. We got to check this out. And so she goes to the Lord to inquire. Again, sibling rivalry. These two boys were fighting in the womb. I don't know what they were fighting about. I mean, we've all been there, but I don't remember much of those days. So I don't know what you fight about in the womb, but there must have been something to fight about. But I don't know what. That's not touching me. Steve nailed it. That's what they were fighting about. He's touching me, Mom. Thank you, Steve. If you cross that line, right, I'm going to smack you. I'm sure, Steve, that's beautiful. I'm sure that's what they were fighting about. So Rebecca goes to the Lord, and the Lord... This is the crazy part. The Lord gives her, in verse whatever this is, 23, the Lord tells her a lot about her children. Two nations are in your womb, and two people from within you will be separated. One people will be stronger than the other, and the older will serve the younger. God tells her, okay, Rebecca, you have two boys inside of you, two nations. And these nations are going to grow apart. They're going to be separated. And guess what? The younger will serve the older. Now, the Lord had instituted back in this time that the older would be the leader and the younger would serve the older. But like the Lord does so many times when he works to establishing his kingdom, he flips that around. And I don't know why God continually flips things around. When you think about the people that he chose over and over and over again, he flipped the rules. And once again, we see that here where he says, hey, Rebecca, the younger is going to serve the older. The younger is going to be the stronger one. We don't follow that as much as we used to. I'm reminded of this over and over again when I'm in meetings in my new job and the older person always gets to speak first. And man, the older person gets the deference even when I think that person is senile. That older person gets to speak into situations over and over again. The older is respected because they are older. But God says, hey, and this time, the younger will serve or sorry, the older will serve the younger, and the younger will be stronger. Now, I hope that raises the question within you, why, God? Why would you choose Jacob over Esau? Why would you choose Jacob over Esau? Now, this can get into all kinds of theological, philosophical things about foreknowledge. Did God pick Jacob because he knew who Esau was in his heart? Did he pick Jacob because he liked him more? I don't know. I mean, we just don't know. But we know that this seems unfair to us. To complicate things, let's go to Malachi chapter 1. Malachi chapter 1, I'm going to read from verses 2 to 4. I have loved you, said the Lord. But you ask, how have you loved us? Was not Esau Jacob's brother, declares the Lord? Yet I have loved Jacob, but Esau have I hated. And I have turned his hill country into a wasteland, and I have left his inheritance to the desert jackals. Edom, name for Esau, may say, though we have been crushed, we will rebuild the ruins. But this is what the Lord Almighty says, they may build, but I will demolish. They will be called the wicked land, a people always under the wrath of the Lord. You will see it with your own eyes and say, great is the Lord, even beyond the borders of Israel. What this passage says, and this is actually a fulfillment, this is actually a fulfillment of what God told Rebekah was going to happen, right? You're going to have two nations within you. One I will make great, and one I will bring down. Ah, I don't know about you, but that gets me. God, why would you declare that before these two boys were born, that one you were going to use and the other you were not going to use? That doesn't seem fair, right? I hope that you're screaming inside, God, that's wrong. God, you shouldn't do that. And then he has this terrible, terrible statement where he says what? I loved Jacob, but I hated Esau. You probably grew up in a home where you could never say, I hate somebody. And God is saying here, I hated Esau. Does that mean that he hated Esau, that he despised him, that he had bitterness towards him, that he wanted to destroy him? I mean, you read this passage, it looks that way. Let's turn to Luke 14. Luke 14, verse 25. Large crowds were traveling with Jesus, and he turned to them and he said, if anyone comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, even his own life, such a person cannot be my disciple. And whoever does not carry his cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. Does Jesus really mean here that we should hate our parents and our brothers and sisters and our wives and our husbands? You could have always used this verse when you were a child and you hated your brother. You could say, I'm just fulfilling Scripture. Remember, the Lord commanded us to hate our brother and sister, right? I'm just doing what God asked. What the concept behind the word hate here and loved here was, I have preference for one over the other. What Jesus is saying is, I want you to prefer me over your husband, over your wife, over your children, over your parents, over your brothers and sisters. You all, that's a hard ask too. That may seem easy to do, but God is saying, I need you to love me more than you love them. What God is saying, and this still doesn't make me feel good, but what God is saying is, I preferred Jacob over Esau. But God, that's not fair. You're supposed to be fair to all people. You're supposed to love everyone. You shouldn't have preferences. Then Romans 9 comes along. And Jesus, or Paul here, talking about this, tries to clarify things and see if you feel better after this. Verse 10. Romans 9:10. Not only that, but Rebekah's children were conceived at the same time by our father Isaac. Yet before the twins were born or had done nothing, anything good or bad, in order that God's purpose of an election might stand, not by works but by him who calls, she was told, the older will serve the younger. Just as that is written, Jacob I love, but Esau I hated. What then shall we say? Is God unjust? That's the cry, right? That's what the cry that all of us have in our stomach. This is not fair, God. Not at all. For he says to Moses, I will have mercy on whom I have mercy. I will have compassion on whom I have compassion. It does not, therefore, depend on human desire or effort, but on God's mercy. For the scripture said to Pharaoh, I will raise you up for this very purpose, that I might display my power in you, and that my name might be proclaimed in all the earth. Therefore, God has mercy on whom he wants to have mercy on, and he hardens whom he wants to harden. The one of you will say to me, this is a great question. So if God chooses who he's going to have mercy on, and he hardens who he's going to have harden on, how can he then turn around and say what? What were you doing? One of you will say to me, then why does God still blame us? For who is able to resist his will? But who are you, a human being, to talk back to God? Shall what is formed say to the one who formed it, why did you make me like this? Does the potter have the right to make out of some lumps of clay pottery for special purposes and some for common use? I don't like this passage. Frustrates me. It goes against my sense of what is fair. But God is saying, I have the right to make some people for special purposes and some for common purposes. Who wants to be for common purposes? And why does God get the right to decide? This reminds me of Job, though, where God says, Job, where were you when I did this? Where were you when I did that? Where are you when the deer give birth in the woods? I don't have any other answer about why God chose Jacob over Esau other than this passage. That's what God wanted to happen. What does that mean for us? Frustration sometimes. Disillusionment sometimes. But I think it also says, how do we fit in to where God wants us to be? How do we fit in where God has chosen to use us and to make us for the purpose that he chose us for? You all, we could turn this around and say, man, God was really ridiculously gracious to Jacob. Because he gave him something that he didn't deserve. But we don't think that way. We just think of poor Esau. Because it seems so unfair to Esau. Again, I wish I had a better answer, but it's a hard, hard truth. God is in control. And sometimes we don't like that. Most of the time. We are okay with it sometimes. If he just listened to us more. You're so much more wiser, stronger, and better than he. But he doesn't. Meanwhile, back in the tents, let's go back there. Verse 24. When the time came for her to give birth, there were twin boys in her womb. The first came out red. His whole body was like a hairy garment. And they named him Esau. Okay, I want to say this. This man was hairy, right? Because when his mother came up with a plan to trick her husband, his father, remember what she put on his brother's skin? A goat, fur of the skin of a goat or a sheep. If you have a baby that's that hairy. That's really hairy. I don't know if it grew a little bit longer and thicker when he got older or whether he was born like that and it was red. I'm sure people said, oh, what a beautiful baby. But I don't know, was he really? I hope somebody asks, man, where did he get all that hair? I will say this. That is one manly child right there. That is, the Bible here couldn't get any clearer in its description of these two men. Esau is the manly man. I mean, he is a man among men. His brother comes out, grasping a hold of his heel. So he was called Jacob, which means what? The heel grabber or the deceiver. Or the one who tries to upsurge or to overtake. By the way, don't we still pull people's legs when we're tricking them? Jacob was pulling his brother's leg. He was the deceiver. So here we have one guy who is clearly a manly man and one guy who is the deceiver who's trying to upsurge and overthrow the powerful one. Isaac was 60 years old when Rebekah gave birth to them. Now, when the boys grew up, so these boys are very, very different. Oh, I want to add, Yeah. The boys grew up and Esau became a skillful hunter, manly man. He's out hunting. He's out, you know, reading hunting magazines, firing guns, well, probably arrows at this point. And he was a man of the open country while Jacob was content to stay at home among the tents. That doesn't mean much to us today, but you all, in that day, men did not stay among the tents. Who stayed among the tent? The women. If you were a boy who stayed among the tents, you were a failure as a man. Because you were not where you were supposed to be. You were with the women. And there was nothing a young man would not want to do in that day than to be called a man who stayed among the tents. When the Bible uses that phrase, you know that he is not a manly man. He is the total opposite of that. He is a mama's boy who hangs out with his mama and has not grown up to be a man. The Bible is making it very clear. These two men are very different. We have one, the prime example of what it means to be masculine. He's hairy, he's hunter, he's doing all kinds of things. And then we have Jacob over here who is with his mama. We know who we're supposed to cheer for. It's not Jacob. He's a failure. He's everything he's not supposed to be. Who's the one that should be praised? It's Esau, that red hairy man who's out there hunting. Why in the world would God pick him? Once when Jacob, what is Jacob doing? He's cooking. Once when Jacob was cooking stew, Esau came in from the... Oh, sorry, I missed one verse that I want to go back to because you all, these two brothers are very different. And then their parents... And I don't know how they got to this stage, but there was a rift that grew in their marriage. And that rift that grew in their marriage is going to spill out all over the place, just like soup here. Isaac, who had a taste for wild game, what did Isaac really like? He liked wild venison, whatever they were hunting. I don't even know what they would have been hunting. Who had a taste for wild game, loved Esau, but Rebekah loved Jacob. This couple picked sides in the conflict. Now, do you think that Rebekah told Isaac that God said the younger is going to serve the older? I hope so. If they didn't, they had a bad marriage, right? 20 years in. As parents, do you have children that you prefer? I'm not going to ask you to answer that question, please. By the way, most research says that yes, that's true. But as long as the children can understand why that's the case and it's not exaggerated, it doesn't affect the children. But in this case, it is clear that the favorite is really evidence to both of these boys. And it becomes a dynamic in the marital problems that this couple is having. They pick boys that they're going to cheer for and that they're going to champion their cause for. They didn't have enough to fight about already. Now they have the children to bring in and have them fight too. And you take this couple's problems and you put that on top of these boys who don't like each other, and you have a royal mess of a family. And it's a mess. Again, I don't know why the Old Testament doesn't have better examples of what family should be rather than example after example of what family should not be. But this is a this is an example of a family that should not be the way it is. But yet again, God's mercy continues to be evidenced despite our messed up, royal, despised lives. Jacob was cooking some stew and Esau came in from the open country famished. He said to Jacob, "Quickly, let me have some of that red stew. I'm famished." This is why he was called Edom, which means red. Jacob said, "First sell me your birthright." Okay, what is the birthright? The birthright is the double portion. He's going to get twice the inheritance that the other children are. He's going to become the priest of the family. That means that he is the spiritual center. He is the one that the oldest son was the one that was in charge of the spiritual life of the family, and he was also the judicial center, or he was the one that got to break up and decide how things were settled when there was conflict in the family. This is not just worth a bowl of soup. This is huge. Double the inheritance, get to be the priest, get to be the judge. Now, sell me your birthright. "Look, I'm about to die," Esau said. If that's not an exaggeration, I don't know what is, right? Something that people that are really into drama would say. What good is the birthright to me? Jacob said, "Swear to me first." So he swore an oath to him, selling his birthright to Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau some bread and some lentil stew that he ate and drank and then got up and left. So Esau despised his birthright. What the Bible is saying here is that Esau could not care less about his birthright. He didn't have any value in all the things that came with it. The priestly role, the judicial role that was there. And he said, "What worth is this to me?" This, I think, tells us something about Esau's temperament and character. He was impulsive, he was pleasure-seeking, and he only thought about what was right in front of him. He did not think about the long term. Now, it doesn't say much about Jacob here either, because Jacob is what? The deceiver. He is the one who pulls our leg. He is the trickster. He is the one who is deceptive. And again, we see him at his deceptive best, sneaking out from underneath of his brother, his birthright. Now, don't you think that Jacob went and told his mom what he did? As tight as those two were, and as much of a unit as they were against their father, I can't believe for a moment that they didn't have a conversation and he said to his mother, "Hey, Mom, I got his birthright." I think that she told him what God, the Lord, had said to her, but I don't know this because I didn't live with them. But I think she told him when he was a little boy growing up, "God has told me that your brother is going to serve you." Is that a secret you could have kept from your child? I mean, I think you should have. But I am positive that he went back and he told his mother, "I got his birthright." I don't know if Rebecca told her husband, because I don't know how much they talked in these days. I don't know how much they really fought and how big that divide was between them, because it was big. But I do know that I think that both boys knew what happened, and both boys knew what this meant long term. Although I still think, this is my other thought, I still think that Esau never thought that he was going to really lose his birthright. I still think he thought his father was going to come through, because who did he have in his back pocket? His dad. His dad loved him more than he loved his brother. I think he made this promise knowing nothing's going to happen to this. There's nothing that's going to happen. Well, you all know this story. Let's turn over a couple chapters. We're going to read the last verse in chapter 26. Verse 34 of chapter 26, when Esau was 40 years old, he ended up marrying two Hittites, which was a source of grief to Isaac and Rebekah. Once again, we see this scriptural principle that says only marry those who, again, in this case, within the people of God, but in the New Testament it comes believers, and he marries outside of that, and God says to him, this is a source of grief to both his father and his mother. Once again, we see that Esau is doing what he wants to do, when he wants to do it, and where he wants to do it, despite of what God says. But again, God did not choose Jacob because of what they did, but because he chose to have favor on Jacob. Because I'm not sure that Jacob is any more bastion of holiness than his brother. Chapter 27. When Isaac was old and his eyes were so weak that he could no longer see, he called for Esau, his oldest son, and said to him, "My son, here am I," he answered. Isaac said, "I am now an old man on my days and don't know the days of my death. Now then, get your equipment, your quiver and your bow, and go out to the open country to hunt some wild game for me. Prepare me the kind of tasty food I like and bring it to me so that I may give you the blessing before I die." Okay, you all. Did Isaac not know what God had said? Or did God really mean for Esau to have the blessing and to have the double portion and to have all the things that go with us? And what did God really mean when he said the older shall serve the younger and the younger shall be the stronger? I don't know. But we do know this, that Isaac doesn't seem to think that Esau shouldn't get the blessing, that Esau shouldn't get the double portion and everything that goes with it. But, you all, this is a small tent, obviously, or at least Rebekah was listening, because listen to this. Now, Rebekah was listening as Isaac spoke to his son Esau. When Esau left for the open country to hunt game and bring it back, we all know that what? Isaac really loved wild game. He loved all that, so he went out to get his stuff. Rebekah said to her son Jacob, "Who's conniving now? It's not Jacob, it's his mother." See, I want to go back to our story last time. The thing that made Rebekah step up and water those camels that had the look of being a servant, which I think it was, also, this is what I will also take from Rebekah. Rebekah was a type of woman who, when there was an opening and nobody was doing something, Rebekah went and moved. Our strengths can be our weaknesses. When Rebekah saw space, she filled it. She does not like vacuums. She does not like it when somebody's not doing something. She is a woman of action. She's not a woman who just sits around and waits for things to happen. Nope. It's a strength and a weakness, right? For those people that have that characteristic. You all, the rest of us have our own crosses to bear where it's our strength and weaknesses, but that's her strength and her weakness. So she and her son, she, not her son yet, look at her son's reluctance. She comes up with this plan. But see, this is where I think they both knew. They both knew that Esau had traded his birthright for a bowl of soup. Rebekah said to her son Jacob, "Look, I overheard your father say to your brother Esau, bring me some game and prepare me some tasty food to eat so that I may give you the blessing in the presence of the Lord before I die. Now, my son, listen carefully and do what I tell you." It is her plan, you all. "Go out to the flock and bring me 2 choice young goats. I will prepare some tasty food for your father just the way he likes it." They've been married for a long time. Then take it to your father to eat so that he may give you his blessing before he dies. Jacob, being the guy that's saying, "I don't know if I want to do this," says to Rebekah, his mother, "But my brother Esau is a hairy man, while I have smooth skin." He's not a manly man. What if my father touches me and I appear to be tricking him and he brings down curses on me rather than a blessing? Good thought there, Jacob, because that could happen. His mother said to him, "My son, let the curse fall on me." This woman is taking charge. "Just do what I say and go and get them for me." So he went and brought them and brought them to his mother, and she prepared some tasty food just the way his father liked it. Rebekah took the best clothes of Esau, her oldest son, which she had in the house, and she put them on her younger son, Jacob. She also covered his hand and the smooth part of his neck with goat skin. Again, hairy man, you all. If you can trick your father with a goat skin, you know that's a lot of hair. Then she handed to her son the tasty food and the bread that she had made. He went to his father and he said, "My father." You all, I cannot imagine how scared Jacob was when he went to his father. His heart had to be beating 180 miles an hour. Because he knows if he gets caught out, this is going to be a curse to him. Even though his mother said she'd take the curse, I don't know, I'd be scared to death. I don't know if Rebecca was pushing him through that tent door saying, "Get in there, I'll kick you." I don't know what she was saying, but I know that he did not want to do this, at least initially. So he goes in. They must not have thought about the voice problem. "Yes, my son, who is it?" Jacob said to his father, "I am Esau, your firstborn. I have done as you told me. Please sit up, eat some of the game so that you may give me your blessing." Isaac said to his son, "How did you find the game so quickly, my son?" "The Lord, your God, gave me success," he replied. Lies after lies here. Then Isaac said to Jacob, "Come near so I can touch you, my son, to know whether you really are my son Esau or not." Jacob went close to his father Isaac, who touched him and said, "The voice is the voice of Jacob." Yes, it is. "But the hands are the hands of Esau." He did not recognize him, for his hands were hairy like his brother Esau. So he proceeded to bless him. But he says first, "Are you really my son Esau?" "I am," he replied. Then he said, "My son, bring me some of the game to eat so that I may give you your blessing." Jacob brought it to him and he ate, and he brought some wine and he drank. And then his father Isaac said to him, "Come here, my son, and kiss me." By the way, this is also a test. So he went to him and kissed him, and Isaac caught the smell of his clothing and he blessed him. He smelled who? Esau in those clothes. He said, "That's the smell of my son Esau, not the son of my son Jacob." And so he blessed him. He said, "The smell of my son is the smell of the field that the Lord has blessed. May God give you heaven's dew and earthly riches and an abundance of grain and new wine. May nations serve you and people bow down to you. Here it is. What did the Lord say? Here it comes. Be Lord over your brothers, and may the sons of your mother bow down to you, and may those who curse you be cursed, and those who bless you be blessed." What God said was going to happen has come true. Now, I hope you're thinking, God, is this the way you wanted it done? Did you want it done through trickery? Did you want it done in this manner? Is this the way you wanted your promise fulfilled? Is this the way that you wanted to form the great nation that you were going to bless all earth? I don't know the answer to that because I don't know the heart of God. I don't think so, but I don't know. I doubt it. I don't know what God would have done had Rebecca not stepped into the gap. After Isaac finished blessing him, Jacob had scarcely left his father's presence and his brother Esau. Oh. By the way, I just thought about that. That's another thing you get afraid of. Can you imagine Esau walking in while you're getting blessed? Ha! That little womb-touching exercise that they had would have been nothing compared to the fight that would have taken place then, right? Wow! That just struck me. That would have been awful. He too prepared some tasty food and brought it to his father, and he said to him, "My father, sit up and eat my game so that you can give me your blessing." His father Isaac asked, "Who are you?" "I am your son, your firstborn Esau." Uh-oh. Isaac trembled violently. He knew that he had been had by his wife and his son. It got him. It went through his heart just like it would for all of us if we knew that our spouse and our son had tricked us. The betrayal, the pain that he felt at that moment. "Who was this then who hunted some game and brought it to me? I ate just before you came and I blessed him. Indeed, he will be blessed." Esau heard his father's words and he burst out with a loud and bitter cry. And he said to his father, "Bless me too, my father." There's the betrayal on both of these men. Because they knew that they had been tricked by their brother and their mother and their wife and their son. I can't imagine the hurt that went into that marriage. That marriage was already in trouble, and now it's even worse. And the animosity that's between these two brothers has just grown. Imagine this happening in your family and what that would do. But he said, your brother came deceitfully and took your blessing. Esau said, isn't he rightly named Jacob, the deceiver, the upsurger, the one who pulls the heel of the other, the heel grabber? The second time he has taken advantage of me. He took my birthright, and now he's taken my blessing. Then he said, have you reserved any blessing for me? Isaac answered Esau, I have made him lord over you, and I made him all of his relatives his servants. I have sustained him with grain and new wine, so what can I possibly do for you, my son? Esau said to his father, do you have one blessing, my father? Bless me too, my father. By the way, I just can't imagine the sadness in this scene. Here is a man with his son who is just begging. The boy who should have got what? The birthright, the double portion, the double blessing, all of those things, and he's just begging, Father, don't you have one left for me? Just one? Esau said to his father, bless me too, your father. And his, by the way, Esau wept aloud. The manly man is not crying. His father, Isaac, answered him, I don't know if this is a blessing. It doesn't sound like a blessing to me. Your dwellings will be away from the earth's richness. Doesn't sound blessing. Away from the dews of the heavens above. You will live by the sword and you will serve your brother. But when you, here it comes, here's the blessing. But when you grow restless, you will throw his yoke from off your neck. Esau held a grudge against Jacob because of the blessing his father had given him, and he said to himself, the day of mourning of my father, for my father is near, then I will kill my brother Jacob. When Rebekah was told that her oldest son had said, she said to her youngest son Jacob and said to him, by the way, more tricks coming. Your brother Esau is planning to avenge you by killing you. Now then, my son, do what I say. Flee at once to my brother Laban in Haran. Stay with him for a while until your brother's fury has subsided. When your brother is no longer angry with you and forgets what you did to him, I will send word for you to come and come back here. Why should I lose both of you in one day? Rebecca says to Isaac, I am disgusted with living because of the Hittites women. If Jacob takes a wife from among the land, from the Hittite women, like these, my life will not be worth living. Now, she may have felt that way, but that wasn't the reason she was sending Jacob back to her brother. It was so that he could stay alive and so that Esau wouldn't kill him. We're going to pause here. We're going to close here. What we see at the end of this story, and by the way, we're going to get to the end of the story next week, I think. What we see, though, here is a broken family. A family that has been torn apart by bitterness, anger, and hostility. It started in a marriage, ended in the children, but the children had their own problems. And the family, the parents didn't step in and intervene. And again, it's hard to know how to intervene. And I don't know what they could have done. I really don't. I don't know where, I still, for the life of me, can't figure out what God would have done. I don't think that matters. I don't know how God would have pulled this off. But how do we keep our marriages from ending in this place? How do we keep our families from ending in this place? We can't always help it. But God is saying, how do we work through that pain? I feel for Esau. I feel for Isaac in this situation. Both of them find themselves in a very difficult place. That doesn't excuse Rebecca. It doesn't excuse Jacob. It's a mess all the way around. And to go in there and try to tease apart that family's problems would have been interesting. I don't know if exciting would have been the right word. It would have been terrifying. But the thing that comes through is God used these messes of human beings to start the country of Israel, the people of Israel. If he did that with this mess, what can he do with me and you? Can we be bigger messes than these folks? These people are walking disasters. And yet, God was faithful. God worked in the midst of that mess. And he can with us too. And again, I don't know what to do with some of those questions about why God chooses who he has chooses to have mercy on. You all, the point there is none of us deserve mercy. But the Lord gives mercy even where none is deserved. Let's pray. Father, right now we lift up all of those who are hurting, all of those families that find themselves in the midst of conflict, pain, rejection, betrayal. Father, you know that those are many, many because we are frail human beings who struggle to get along with each other. Father, forgive us in our struggles to do that. Father, help us to seek you for the mercy that you can give us. Father, help us to be patient when we don't get that mercy, to know that you are in charge. Father, thank you for your faithfulness. Thank you that you continue to use us despite our many, many failings. Thank you in your name. Amen.